out like a gentleman. Oh, yes, hello.
We're going to sex.
I'm a bad bitch!
I need to get drunk. This is fucking horseshit.
Goodbye to the people who love me.
Something about you, girl.
If you're not suffering, you're not learning.
That's it, bro.
Suffering means everything.
Do me a favor. Take a knife, stab yourself in it. I'm just kidding.
Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Welcome. I am your muse.
Master of ceremonies.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Tim. I wasn't expecting a ukulele chord intro.
Interlude. All right, let's move on.
Do you feel like you're on a beach at a tiki bar?
I feel like I'm on a beach and it's snowing. And Jesus is blowing his Kleenex in my face right now.
The holiest Kleenex.
May the great, what is it, from Hitchhiker's Guide? It's like the great green Arkel sea chair. Going to take his handkerchief and wipe us all clean.
Can't wait.
So, Eric.
It's season 3 finale.
Let's go.
We did it.
We made it.
It's season 3. We did 3 seasons of this shit, and we finally hit 1,000 listens.
Thank you all. We appreciate you.
Yeah, like more and more every day.
Like we look at our listen count, and we see that, you know, this is up to 1,000, and Gedung Files are way past what we ever thought they would be at.
Far beyond.
But we appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening. We love you. Eric and I are just two dumb guys that just talk shit.
Very dumb.
Very dumb.
Sometimes smart. Most of the time dumb.
I was going to say, that sometimes the smartness comes out of you and then I speak. And it's just like, the intelligence just dropped about 10,
false.
10 points.
False.
So Eric, tonight I know there's a subject that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
You know, ever since you and I started talking, like, get to know each other, you know, as our friendship has evolved into, you know, romantic, I mean, platonic, I mean, I don't know, touch butts, I don't know. But ever since it's become to that point, one of the first things that I had learned about you was one of your favorite things was Cowboy Bebop. Like, that was always the thing that, like, stuck in the back of my brain. And I know when it first came out that they were doing live action, you and I were talking about it. And it was kind of like, you and I were like, kind of like how we were with the Joker with Todd Phillips. And we're like, you know, I would talk to you and you'd be like, yeah, I'm interested. And then something else would come out and you'd be like, I don't know, kind of gun shy. And the live action has finally come out. So I wanted to see what your thoughts were on this adaptation of Cowboy Bebop, the live action series.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Unleash hell upon me. Cthulhu is coming.
Octopus face, activate. You're right. Gun shy was the word for like years leading up to it, because they were talking about it for a long time. I guess I want to give like a little bit of backstory for whoever's going to listen, and I kind of for you too, because you might have already heard the backstory just in the beginning conversations of our like blooming friendship.
Yes.
But with Cowboy Bebop, it's kind of cool because it's one of the shows that I gravitated towards in high school. And like, I still have very fond and like vivid memories of hanging out with Carlos at our old friend Watson's house in Chicago. And he was like, dude, you gotta watch this fucking show. You watch the show? Dude, the guy with the gun is fighting the guy with the sword, and they switch weapons. And they throw them back to each other. It's fucking sick. And I was like, wow. Yeah, I totally need to watch the show like yesterday. So Cowboy Bebop came on Adult Swim around 2001. So when I found out about it, it was like 2003-ish. So I watched the finale first. And then when it replayed on Adult Swim, I watched it from start to finish again.
Yeah.
So ever since then, I've been watching it almost off and on for like, not maybe annually, just like a nice thing to kind of go back to and look at. And I would say that it's very instrumental in me being a writer and me wanting to actually pursue it and like actually pursue writing a novel. That and like Evangelion, those two shows are like really integral to like my writing style.
Yeah, I have to go back and watch Evangelion because I know you talk about it quite frequently with me.
I would say, like, if anybody reads how I write, I guess Evangelion was important in kind of showing me how to write a grandiose type of story. And Cowboy Bebop was how to do a more subtle, a more less is more, a simpler kind of story. So I kind of took tons of influence and inspiration from both those shows, but more Cowboy than anything else. So I watched the live action, and, you know, I'll say this. First episode is good. I would say it's probably the closest you're going to get to the original cartoon. Let me ask this, though. How much of the show have you watched? Because I feel like what I say might not make sense at times.
I got to about episode 3. And I just have not had the time to go back. Because, like, you and I have had this conversation. When I watch something, I like to fully invest in it. And usually the only time I get to watch things now is, like, when I'm working. And I have it on in the background. That's why I usually watch things that I've already watched before.
Yeah.
Just so I can kind of, like, if I hear something, I know what's going on, and I can just kind of play it in my head. But, yeah, I got through episode 3.
What were your thoughts on that?
I thought it was good. I got through 3, and I'm like, I'm going to go back to this. And, like I said, I just haven't gotten back to it. But I thought the characters were good. From what I've seen, it doesn't take itself too seriously, which I always look for in an anime. Usually I do like a little bit of levity to kind of counteract some of the more heavy elements of these type of anime. You know, even with like stuff like Danganronpa or Ace Attorney or stuff like that, where it's like real heavy source material, where it's like based around murder and stuff like that. I like it to be a little bit light. So Cowboy Bebop, I think, did a good job balancing that out.
I would agree. And I think that as you go on, because there's 26 episodes in total, it's like this, up and down, up and down. They do a really good job of having like a very sad moment and then light right after.
Yeah.
Especially if you're like binging it, if you watch them like straight through, you can see it like it fucking goes all over the place. So when I started watching the show, I was looking for how they were going to handle the mood. Because I feel like the mood is everything.
Yeah.
With this show. And when it comes to remakes, when it comes to like all the different reboots and all the things that we're seeing now where Americans try to take shows from, like, other countries and try to, like, revamp them and, like, put them back into pop culture with, like, a modern spin on it. It's like, okay, I always watch and I'm like, okay, what did you take away from that show? Is it the same thing I took away from that show? Because I know what I would have done if I was in charge of this show. So I'm like, okay, let's see what these dudes do. I'm going to just hold all judgment until the very end. One thing I didn't like right off the bat was how long the episodes were. When you look at Cowboy Bebop, that shit is like 20 minutes next, 20 minutes next.
Which is pretty standard for typical anime.
Agree. But the way that the show is paced, it moves so fast. You missed stuff. You'll miss important shit, like, quick if you're not paying attention. If you're kind of sitting down and, like, the way that this show, the remake, tries to, like, bolster that is by making longer episodes and, like, more talking. Like, fleshing out things that honestly don't need to be fleshed out. And I think that's the thing that these folks fucked up on, is what made the show so good. It was the allure, the mystery. Like, when you think about the villain of the show, Vicious, you don't really see him until, like, episode 5 in the anime. He's not really, like, a true villain. He's more like...
Like, puppeteer kind of thing?
He's more like a boogeyman.
Okay.
Like a Michael Myers. Like, when he walks in the room, he's the kind of villain that you and I used to talk about where it's like, the room changes.
Yeah.
When he walks in, it's like, oh, fuck. We're gonna die, or we gotta be really fucking careful.
Careful, yeah.
That's the kind of villains that I always gravitate towards.
Tightrope walking through a minefield kind of thing.
Right. So, when I say allure, that not only goes to how you perceive the villain, it's how you perceive the love interest, Julia. So, in the anime, you have, like, tiny, tiny flashbacks of this woman. Usually when Spike's about to die, he sees this woman sitting in a window, and you're like, what the fuck, who is that? You see her in the credits at the end of the show, like, way more than you actually hear her talk. Mm. You actually see her be a character on the show. You just see her face, and you see these, like, images of, like, Spike in the rain outside her window, holding flowers, and you're like, what the fuck does this all mean? That is the allure, because for me, a show like this, you don't have to do a lot of talking. You can give me a 30-second image and just raindrops. I got you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good enough, if you know what you're doing, if you have the vision, you can set it up. I don't need to see you talking for 10 minutes about, oh yeah, we gotta do this, and oh yeah, you're gonna do this to me, and then you'll be the one. And then the guy's like, oh yeah, right, yeah, we got plans. I wonder if they'll come true. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like...
expositional dialogue.
Unnecessary.
Yeah.
If you can give me a picture, face, music, that's it. That show encapsulates that perfectly. Better than any other show, I think. A lot of shows now, American or otherwise, a lot of them don't do that.
No, they rely a lot on, like I said, expositional dialogue. There's a lot of...
slick dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to cram so much into such a small amount of time. And Marvel's to blame for that. A lot of comic book movies are to blame for that. Because there's a lot of fucking lore and backstory they're trying to shove on you. That way you follow what's going on. With a story, right, with a story like this, you don't need it. It's better to just have the feeling. Like, the feelings that you get only seeing half the picture, that's the allure, dude. That's the mystery.
Leaving it open for interpretation kind of thing.
1,000%. Yeah. Without that, if your writing's not good enough to carry it, leave it the way it is in terms of making it mysterious. If you don't have a big budget, save it for really cool imagery and like cinematography. But this show decided ultimately to basically do too much talking. There's way too much fucking talking, and that's what killed it for me. John Cho was... I didn't realize he was 50.
Really? I didn't realize he was that old either.
Yeah. Spike in the show is 24. So they got a 50-year-old guy.
Playing a 24-year-old?
Yes.
It's like Michael J. Fox playing a high school student?
Yeah.
Doesn't quite work?
He does a decent job of trying to sound like Spike. He can't fight like the way they drew Spike in the show. And I think that's the part that affects the fighting. They didn't really film this shit when they fight. They didn't film it like free-flowing combat. They filmed it like just a regular kung fu movie that you would see on Netflix. Like, here's a crazy shot with like a Dutch tilt and like, I'm going to flip over the table and the camera's going to flip with them and then it's going to land on the other side and it's going to make you want to barf. And I'm like, all you really need to do is just give him a broom and then like have the guy throw punches and then Spike will like move with the punches and then hit him with the broom. Like, if you know how to film that, or if you get people good enough and professional enough to film it like that, like, get the guys who shot The Raid. I've been saying The Raid is some of the baddest martial arts as far as film for the last like 15 years. Get those dudes.
Well, like, one of the episodes I remember, it's the first episode, and I can't remember the name of the guy that's smuggling the red eye.
Asimov.
But he goes to fight Spike, and when he's trying to punch Spike, he's kind of moving around the punches. Like, I mean, yeah, it's not something like somebody like me could do, but it's easy to film that kind of thing. Or, and Spike's kind of taunting him the entire time.
Yeah. There's a playfulness.
Yeah.
The playfulness is not here. Now, like, there's banter. There's too much banter. Like, the banter is like, one minute it's good, and the next minute it's like, okay, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Please shut the fuck up. I want to say that the guy who played Jet, Mustafa Shakir, is like the best guy in the whole show. Like, he carried that whole show for me, because at a certain point, I was like, this is a rough watch, dude. Like, after the first episode, it fucking drops. Like, the quality, as far as episode, as far as storytelling, drops fucking dramatically.
That's sad.
But Jet carries that show. He really, like, his voice sounds just like Bo Billingsley, the guy who did the voice of Jet on the cartoon. He sounds really fucking close to him. And I think he embraced the role.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he got it. Probably more so than Spike, than John Cho as Spike. But where the show fucks up, I think, is if you're not going to have the allure, you're showing your villain every episode. So imagine Michael Myers. He comes out on Halloween. He stabs a dude. And then you see Michael Myers just walk home and then sit in the garage until the next day. And then he goes back out again. As soon as he goes back out again, the music starts. And then you see like 15 minutes of him just like standing back in the garage again. And you're like, why am I seeing Michael in fucking off mode? Like, what are we doing?
Well, and you and I have talked about this at great length before, you know, with a lot of the movies that we have watched and we've reviewed on the channel. The problem with Americans, and I hate to say it this way because it's going to sound very anti-American, Byron.
We're so self-loathing.
Right? My problem is that they have no appreciation for subtlety. They don't like the subtle, they don't like nuanced writing.
I think a lot of people who are writing these shows, either they're told not to do that.
Yeah.
And they're, like, admonished and, like, punished and, like, whipped for doing so. So they have to try to make it as, like, fucking bombastic.
How
as
dare you use this metaphor in this show?
How they have to try to make it as, like, bombastic as possible, but, like, they don't have the budget to do that.
Right.
So they're just like, fuck it, let's just... Everybody makes dick jokes. It's like, no, no, actually, no, guys, no. No, can't, no, not...
everybody make a dick joke. Now.
Somebody actually made a clip of Spike and Jet in the restaurant with a laugh track and the fucking Seinfeld bass line. Boom, 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 boom. And when I say, like, the laugh track makes it 10 times worse, I'm not fucking with you.
Oh, Lord.
It's bad. It makes the show look 10 times worse. Like, you didn't know what you were really trying to do with this thing. And then when they interviewed the guy, the showrunner, he was like, we know it means a lot to a lot of people, and we're going to try not to fuck it up. Oh, well.
Mission failed.
I would say, if it was me, if you got to do an hour episode, then you got to do 3 mini episodes in 1 hour. You've got to spice the shit up. We've been talking about that. That's kind of been like the sort of narrative through line throughout the whole season 3. Was like, how do you jazz up your storytelling? How do you keep things creative? How do you get casual people who don't even know what this show is? How do you get them in?
Right.
I am glad that there are people that watched the live action and liked it. And they're like, yeah, it was decent. I'm going to go watch the cartoon. And they're going to be fucking blown away. Guaranteed. But for me, if you're able to take something from, like, that long ago and you make a version of it now, it doesn't have to be better.
Yeah.
But if you make a version of it now that, like, knocks people on their ass, that's what we're looking for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you are definitely one of the most, you know, you're one of the people that I know that is the most open and willing to give these kind of things a shot. You know, you're not immediately one to write off anything.
I watched the shit and I binged this live action in like 2 days.
Yeah.
I'm like, let me just bum rush it and just, maybe it's good. You know, here's a really good example. So, in the show, you don't see Vicious until episode 5. In the live action, Julia and Vicious are married. Yeah. So, what you had originally was Spike and Vicious were in the Red Dragon Syndicate, which they got rid of the Red Dragon part in the show, the live action, which is called The Syndicate, which I think is a bad idea. It's like, The Syndicate. I'm like, The only syndicate. In the entire fucking...
Ever.
In the entire galaxy. I feel like Red Dragons still sounds cool to this in this day and age. Unless they're like, no, Asians are going to be pissed. No, I don't think they care. But, so, you have Vicious in every episode, and he's, like, basically trying to take over the syndicate. And he's abusive towards Julia. So, here's a number of problems with that. You have a character that originally was sort of like a dark mirror for Spike.
Mm.
He didn't really need to have too much of a backstory. He was a soldier. He was a pro fucking killer. He's an assassino. So that's what the fuck he does. That's what he does best. So it's natural to have a storyline where he's going to want to take over the syndicate. The elders, the mob bosses are going to be like, no, you're too wild, you're too reckless, get the fuck out of here. And he's going to, you know, stage a coup and take this shit over.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead of just having that, or implying that, you have Vicious standing before the little tribunal of elders, and they're like, you must kill your wife to prove your loyalty. Here's a gun. And he takes the gun. And he looks genuinely worried and nervous. This is supposed to be the villain.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be fearful of this man. And he's quivering. Like, the second time you see him, he's quivering. And he pulls the trigger. The gun's not loaded. He was going to kill his wife. And they're like, good boy. Wow. That's the bad guy. All right. So I already see where the shit's going.
Yeah.
Next scene. She basically, Julia, like, is like, you know, you're not a man. And he, like, chokes her. And he's like, don't you ever tell me I'm not a man. And I'm like, wow. British accent unnecessary. Why are you choking her? That's your wife. She took a fictional bullet for you, and you're beating her up. You already know where I'm going with this.
I do, unfortunately.
You're taking one stereotype, if you're going to call the original Vicious a stereotype, which is, he's supposed to be a badass anime villain. He has a bird on his shoulder. You don't really know why, but it's there. And he's like half samurai. He's got the Bishonen, the white hair. Super skinny. Like, unusually skinny body. These archetypes don't exist in real life, so we're not going to put them in the show. So you're going to make him a dude who has daddy issues and punches his wife?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why not?
Fuck it, let's go.
Run it.
By the way, the bird did have a purpose. The bird drops bombs on people, which is way cooler.
I mean, that's kind of badass. I'm not going to lie.
You could have had a grenade-dropping bird in this show, and I would have clapped for that shit. But you didn't. You got to put in women abuse. Because that's supposed to make me hate the villain more. No, okay. And I've heard on podcasts and I've heard writer interviews where people say, oh, you know how you make a villain really bad? Just have him do bad stuff to children or pets or women. That works every time. It's not a fucking dartboard. Are you writing a real character, or are you just bullshitting me? Because, see, now I'm getting in my writer bag.
I was going to say, are we doing a writer workshop right now? Is that what's happening?
You know what? I was thinking about this earlier. I was like, you know what? I bet I'll fucking put money down. You and I could have a 10-minute writer workshop, and we can write a story about a fucking transgender vampire and fucking kill that shit, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Because we're not trying to fill quotas. We're not checking boxes. We don't have a dartboard of shit. It's like, okay, we need this, and we need this, and this. We're not doing that shit. We're trying to actually make meaningful characters. And I'll get back to that. But taking Vicious and making him this, like, impotent fucking loser who basically is only successful in the mob because his dad is in the mob. So
that's another trope we're going to?
TVtropes.org, baby.
Is daddy's successful and he's trying to live up to daddy?
Fail upwards. Even in anime. Fuck out of here, okay? Now, let's pivot to Faye Valentine.
Peabot.
Now, that was another thing that made me worry about the show, because they cast Faye, her costume was different. Fans were like, why aren't you wearing the skimpy outfits? The actress came out and pretty much, like, talked down everybody and said, well, guys, I'm not 6'2 and, like, 180 pounds and, like, I can't fucking fit in these bikinis. And everybody's like, wow, really? Bad reaction on fucking both sides, if you ask me.
Sorry, I'm, like, looking these up while you're telling me the character names.
So you see side by side.
Yeah.
Now, Daniela Pineda, she was in, like, Jurassic World. She was, like, one of the, like, young hackers. So, she's not, like, a bad actress or anything. She's actually, like, kind of funny in Jurassic World. So, I think she'd be fine. But the way that they wrote Faye's character in the live action, you're basically taking somebody who's, at least in the anime, she's a femme fatale style character, but she's kind of a mix of different tropes. She woke in cryo sleep, she's got amnesia, but she's also got a gambling problem.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, that's why the episode is called fucking Hard Luck Woman. So she's got a lot going on.
Right.
In this show, they kind of gloss over that part, and they focus on making her like sort of like a super obnoxious, like, hustler. So, like, when she talks to people, she's like, hey, dickweeds, listen to me. And it's like, a lot of, like, the dick jokes and a lot of, like, that weird, like, somebody, what was the name of that lady who put out the article? Her name was, Gina Jackson. She wrote an article for Vice, and she's like, what is the deal with all the Joss Whedon dialogue in fucking Cowboy Bebop? And I'm like, yes, this is the fucking problem, because, huge example, when Faye is on the ship in the live action, she basically does this thing where she comes up with, like, a way to shower, and she's like, Why, how come there's no hot water in the ship? And she's like, well, hey, I used all the hot water. You know, I did the whole shower, bath, shower thing. And they're like, what? And she's like, shower, bath, shower. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You get in the shower, you let the hot water wash off the grime, then you take a hot bath, and then you re-shower again, and it's the best thing ever. And then they're like, that's stupid. And I'm like, okay, 10 minutes from now, they're going to love it. And Spike comes like, oh my God, the whole shower, bath, shower thing was great. And she's like, told you. And I'm like, see, it's
very by numbers, sounds like.
Dude, next thing, they're going to throw in some lesbian shit. Fine, I'm fine with that too. You want to gay it up? Drop the gay on me. Gay me up. You know what I'm saying?
Gay me up.
So, randomly, there's a mechanic on the Bebop working on, turbines that are fucked up for Jet. And then Faye is flirting with the lesbian mechanic. And I was like, awesome. Cool. Totally not bothered by that. Until she's basically walking around with a fucking rail gun trying to talk to everybody about how cool her, like, handheld rail gun is. And the mechanic's like, oh yeah, that's cool, yeah, you can shoot it through like a fucking pinhole and all this stuff. And she's like, there's nothing really, you know, worth stealing on the ship. And I'm like, except you. And then the lady said, except you. I called the fucking lesbian flirt line. I'm sitting there with my coffee, like, I almost dropped my fucking coffee. It's like 5 a.m. I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, man.
Some fucking Black Mirror shit. Hi, Eric.
So, you know, they just fuck on the ship, basically, which is fine. I mean, like, okay, but, like, I don't think gay people actually flirt like that. Is that true? I don't know.
I've never been flirted with by a homosexual.
I think the only time I went to the Pride parade, the one guy was like, are you straight? And I'm like, extremely. And he's like, oh, and he walked away. And I'm like, maybe that is how they flirt. I don't fucking know. But, like, nothing worth stealing on the ship except you. I was like, fuck off. Fuck off. Another one. Jet is calling on this lady for information. It's like an information broker. And she's like an old white lady who has the hots for Jet because he's a sexy chocolate man, you know? And she's like, basically, yeah, I'll give you the information, but you gotta take me out to dinner. And Jet's like, this is blackmail. And she's like, that's right, because Jet, you are black and you are male.
That's sexual, baby.
Tim, does that line bother you like it bothers me?
What's wrong? That's a double entendre.
That's not even entendre. There's no entendre.
Double entendre.
You're black, big penis, gimme. There's no entendre there. There's zero entendre. There's negative entendre. It's a
negative entendre.
Dick in my face.
That's not even entendre. It's just
tendre. On. It's just on. It's just on you. So, do you see where I'm going with this? You're substituting when people have been, like, saying in the reviews, because, like, since we've been kind of waiting to record, I've been watching other reviews, not letting it, like, cloud my own judgment, because I was, like, already, like, all right, I'm ready to, like, firebomb this shit. But people are like, yeah, the original show was, like, style over substance, and I'm like, no, not true. At least I don't believe so. If you show me an image of a little girl walking down the sidewalk in the rain. No talking, no fucking profanity, no, like, you know, like, no hokey bullshit happening to her. That tells me way more than having her have, like, a 10-minute conversation with, like, a random NPC just standing on the street.
It seems like, from what you're telling me, whereas the original anime was more about conceptualization and more of the visual elements and, like, subtlety and, like...
Music.
Yeah.
The music was written before the show.
Oh, really?
The music inspired them to change scenes in the show.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
But, I mean, whereas, you know, like, with what you were talking about with Faye and the mechanic, you know, whereas in the anime they might have had something in, like, a subtle glance or maybe, you know, one word of dialogue or something like that, they're trying to make it... They're trying to make it more clever through wordplay, and it sounds like it's failing.
Big time. You know, you guys, the people who wrote this, I looked up their IMDb. They did a lot of, like, more recent X-Men comics.
Mm.
But for some reason, they decided to throw in a lot of Tarantino and a lot of Robert Rodriguez and a lot of Joss Whedon in the Cowboy Bebop, when really what we really needed,
mm-hmm,
was just some good-ass jazz in the background. All we really needed was just some good-ass music in the background, and they have that.
I'm going to say, Tank is definitely one of the fucking best themes for anything I've ever heard.
All time. All-timer.
Because that thing is a fucking earworm.
Yeah. The whole... Dude, so many good songs. I bought the soundtrack, the 4-disc soundtrack, they sent it to me in, like, this, like, fucking, like, from, like, Taiwan, like, this, like, wrapped in newspapers. I'm like, this is, like, the holy grail of fucking anime music, dude. I still listen to that shit. I have the box set down in the basement. But, like, you know, another example, the testicle guy. I gotta tell you about the testicle guy. So, in them showing Vicious trying to take over the syndicate, they show him doing deals with the other mob bosses to try to overthrow Daddy fucking Starbucks, Warbucks,
whatever. Devil Daddy?
Devil Daddy.
Rune Center?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, basically, you have one of the mob bosses who, he's not even in the fucking anime, but he says a line in the live action. He said, what is it? You've never known power until you've tasted the testicles of a man who has wronged you.
Huh?
That is so dumb. I will never forget that fucking line.
I mean, I guess I'm gonna fucking go chew on some balls now.
Chew on my nuts. You insult me, I will chew on your fucking vas deferens.
How dare you?
Vas deferens.
You have insulted me. Bring me your fucking testiculars right now.
Produce testiculars on a tablet.
Give me your fucking swingers right now.
Give me them danglers. Holy fuck. So, while Vicious is setting up this this coup, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure that's what they did in the first season of Daredevil with the Kingpin. Anyway, also, the scene they use to introduce Vicious is him walking through the... You ever seen those, like Narcos and, like, the other fucking movies that have, like, the naked drug, like, rollers? Like, they're handling the drugs,
yeah,
but they're, like,
yeah,
naked.
Yeah, like, and blow and shit like that.
Yeah, and, like, okay, but this time they have their eyes sewn shut, and then they're like, what do we do with them? And Vicious is like, we'll let them go. I'm just kidding, let's shoot them. And they just have, like, a slow motion, like, mow down. St. Valentine's Day Massacre mow down. I'm like, so, okay, punch women, shoot blind people, daddy issues, great.
Yeah, because you want, I mean, the main goal is to, you know, I'm sure, do Spike and Vicious end up confronting each other, like fighting?
Yeah.
So when they fight, their goal is that if Vicious gets what's coming to him, then it's more satisfying, the payoff's more satisfying.
It should be.
It should be, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be. And from what it sounds like,
I want it off my fucking TV. Because I have no desire to see him. And it's not even the actor's fault. They should have got just another Asian dude and gave him a white wig. And it's like, I looked it up. I'm like, okay, who are people in the age bracket that could play these guys? Their names, Louis Tan, Ludie Lin, all the dudes that were in Mortal Kombat, throw them in. Done. You're done. Just get those dudes. But you're trying to go for recognized names, but you go with the guy from Harold and Kumar. My guys, what the fuck are we doing? Like, just get young actors that can fight and show them the anime if they already don't know and fucking like it, and just let them do their thing. But it's like, it's overproduced.
Well, and like, people try and make characters like, the best one I can think of that was like absolutely deplorable was Joffrey Baratheon. Because Joffrey Baratheon was just a fucking little punk-ass motherfucking kid.
Kid.
Yeah. But he was detestable. He fucking, I mean, not even just him. I mean, look at fucking Ramsay Bolton in fucking Game of Thrones.
Excellent villains.
Excellent villains. Because Ramsay Bolton was one of those where it was like, man, when this dude gets his, it's gonna fucking, and spoilers, everybody. Spoilers. Like when he gets eaten by his own dogs. That's poetic justice.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, you made it, like, there were subtle things. Yes, there were very overt things he did. Like, he raped Sansa and all that stuff. But, like, there were subtle things that he did. Like, even the scene before the Battle of the Bastards, where he has Rickon Stark. And he's like, there's your brother, go to him.
Oh, yeah.
Go to him. I'll let you go to him.
That was very memorable.
Yeah, and he takes out the bow and arrow and he starts shooting at him. To write a villain, and you know me, like, villains are, that's my wheelhouse. Like, I don't like good heroes, I like a good villain. But, like, to write a good villain, yes, you should be able to empathize or sympathize with them on some kind of level. You know, like a Victor Freeze kind of situation. But, like, if you try and do it to where they're just the biggest piece of fucking human garbage on the planet, the character doesn't become anybody that you can empathize with anymore. They're just annoying. And you just don't want to deal with them.
Yeah, like, when you're creating a villain, you need to have some sort of emotion. You need to pull that emotion from your audience.
Yeah.
So, in the show, for me, I always interpreted Vicious as just like, not just the dark mirror of Spike, but like, he's just like, purely focused on death.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he represents. He's like, the past catching up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the anime, Julia was in the syndicate with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like them. So, she was with Vicious. There was a moment when she spends the night with Spike.
Mm-hmm.
They fall in love. Vicious finds out, and he tells Julia, you gotta kill him, or you both go. So Julia decides to run away.
Mm.
That's what causes the rift. When they actually show you this in the show, in the live action, when I tell you, it's like the most ham-fisted shit possible, I'm not fucking kidding.
That's sad.
Because how they show it in the show is, okay, in the cartoon, it's almost in sepia tone. Spike's at the bar. All you see is him go like this. And it cuts to her in like a leather fucking suit. And then it cuts to them just in bed. That's all you get. That's all you need, right?
Mm.
In the live action, Vicious is basically like being groomed by his dad to be like a capo, basically. So he's like, you're gonna make a deal with the fucking Neptunians. We're gonna make a deal, we'll get some diamonds, whatever the fuck. And then Vicious goes in there and blows the deal. He's a bad negotiator, and he's like, well, they disrespected you, father, and like the dad like slaps him like, you bitch. And then they're driving together. So Spike meets Julia like that night. They're all in the car together. Like Spike and Julia like dance. They've been Vicious and like her have been going out for like, they said 12 dates, but this all happens in one episode. So in the span of 60 minutes, he meets the girl. They go on 12 dates. She meets Spike. They're already hot for each other. Vicious gets out the car and beats the Neptunian guy up. Because he sees him later on like, you disrespected me and my father. And he looks at Spike like, get her out of here. I'm going to take care of this guy. And in the live action, they juxtapose Vicious pulling this dude's teeth out and setting him on fire with Julia cheating on him with Spike. After meeting him that first night. Look at you shaking your head. You're like, what the fuck am I listening to?
This is what I was talking about earlier, though. It's like you said ham-fisted.
Ham. Ham-shank.
And, like, ham-fisted is probably the most appropriate. Because nobody likes subtlety. Nobody likes metaphorical stuff anymore. It's just got to be very direct, in your face, like, that kind of stuff is just lazy to me. I don't like it.
I could give you a better example. And I'm not trying to, you know, say I'm better than anybody. Obviously, they got jobs in Hollywood. I don't. Here's how you fix that in a Cowboy Bebop style, if it was me. Music in the background. No talking. Vicious, you can still have Vicious pull dude's teeth out. You see the blood, you see the teeth. Julia's standing there. And then it cuts to her and Spike. Done.
Mm-hmm.
The way the show is, you don't need to hear the poetry. You don't need to hear the romance. The music is the romance. The feeling of having your heart broken and the feeling of longing, the feeling of you and I could run away together tonight, but we can't.
Because
we know what's going to happen if we do. That is the romance. That's the whole soul of this fucking show. And it's been ripped out.
Yeah. A lot of it is just, it's a lot of, I'm trying to think of how to articulate this.
That's some bullshit, no, I'm just kidding.
Bullshit would be appropriate. It's just,
it's like misguided. It's misguided.
Yeah, misguided. Misguided and just, it's very heavy-handed. Very heavy-handed. And it's sad. It's sad because for people like you that have been waiting for this to come out and it doesn't live up to expectations, it's just, that's sad.
I'm always curious to see how other people interpret stuff. Like, think about me just now. I asked you first how you felt about the show before I go on to my fucking long-winded horse shit. Because I got more. Unless you have anything else you want to. So, I guess we can get to the finale. What they decide to do with the show here is they cut the season in half. So where the live action ends, we're technically only at episode 5. So, the fight in the church. So, what's weird is with all the padding and all the extra talking and all the extra storylines, Jet, I feel like Jet carries the show still in that it's like the most honest and it's like the most heartfelt storyline because they make him like a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Not a deadbeat dad, but like, you know, the wife remarried and he's like trying to be nice to the daughter, bring gifts, and the wife's like, get the fuck out of here. So it's like Ant-Man. It's like Cowboy Bebop Ant-Man.
Did you spit cards out?
No.
Well, that's disappointing.
But, in a weird way, the way that they handled Jet's backstory in the live action, I actually thought it was decent. It was it almost kind of reminded me of like L.A. Noire, Sin City style, like hat, overcoat, sitting in the car with your partner, like talking about the good old days and shit. Like I dug that. I dug that. And then the dude fucking, you know, he's like, he got the gun and he's like fucking Hardigan in Sin City. He's like walking through the shipping containers. I'm like, you know what? I like that.
Yeah.
So I like two episodes out of the whole season. But Jet really carries that whole shit. But the way that they mix him into the finale, and they, when they mix Faye in the finale, it goes back to that ripping the soul out of the show.
Because, the purest part of the show.
Yeah, because while Vicious is doing the planning the coup d'etat, Julia's in the background basically like, I need to get out. I need to find a way to get out. So she finds out Spike's alive through the nightclub owner. Which, by the way, the whole nightclub thing is fucking goofy. Because in the anime, the person who they kind of is like the big mama of the group, the one that's like the protector, is the old lady that runs the convenience store. But she's like a gun smuggler, which is like beast as fuck. But instead, they make her a nightclub owner where all the mafia guys hang out at.
Because why not?
And Julia's like the makeup lady who becomes the nightclub singer. And that's how Vicious falls in love with her. I guess they just needed a place for jazz to happen. they couldn't just have jazz like in the moment. Like, no, we need a reason for jazz. So, after spending a bunch of time referencing Jet's daughter, seeing her, there is one scene that's really cute where in the middle of a, like, Spike fighting in the background, Jet is doing a hollow, like Black Mirror almost kind of hologram thing where he's in the audience for the recital. So Spike's fighting like 20 assassin dudes outside here and he's like dancing, watching his daughter do ballet. I thought that was cute. Anyway, daughter gets kidnapped.
No.
No way. So, Spike and Jet have to go save the daughter, and then Jet's like, you know.
Did she get kidnapped by the syndicate?
Yeah. But Jet's like, wow. if anything happens to my daughter, I'm going to fuck you up, Spike. And I'm like, okay, all right, I see. Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Hollywood. Let's do this. So.
Christ.
They get kidnapped because the daughter's a hologram and they're in the church tied up. Faye decides to save them at the end. So she shows up in the jet, the red jet, and like shoots the dude through the window. But she does like a battle cry. Tim, do you want to hear the battle cry?
Not sure that I do.
She says out loud, "Welcome to the ouch. Motherfuckers." I don't know about
Goodbye,
you.
Goodbye, Eric.
I don't know about you, but when I'm holding a machine gun, I'm never going to say, welcome to the ouch part, guys.
Goodbye to the ouch. I am leaving.
Tim has left the room.
I am leaving my house.
Tim has re-entered the room.
I'm leaving Illinois.
Tim is slowly producing a shotgun.
Eric is leaving existence. Welcome to the ouch, Eric.
I think I'm going to start saying that after I take a really hard dump. Welcome to the ouch.
Shouldn't you say that before?
Maybe before. During. Yeah. During. So, that horrible line is uttered, and I'm like, oh no. At that point.
Welcome to the ouch.
At that point, my wife was like, uh-uh.
Can I go into the out now?
Uh-uh. So, they kind of speed up the storyline, so at the end of the anime, Vicious takes over the syndicate. The syndicate! Bang!
Bing bang.
yo, at Coney Island, we fucking run with the Red Dragon. Anyway, so Vicious takes over the syndicate, and he's like a bad bitch. But they're doing that here in episode 5 instead of episode 26. All right. So Spike and him are fighting. They have like a shot-for-shot fight.
Do they do like the John Woo thing where they both end up with pistols and then shoot at each other and both pistols are empty?
No, because Vicious only uses a samurai sword.
Okay.
So it's basically Vicious has the sword right here. Spike's got the gun right here. So it's like heart to heart. And they say the lines line for line, like Civil War, like they're trying to like recreate to get people to clap and like, oh my God, it's so cool. Fuck off. After all the shit you show me, you're trying to do this at the end? Fuck out of here.
There's no redemption, goddammit.
Fuck out of here. So instead of what happens in episode 5 where Vicious throws Spike out the church window, Spike drops a grenade, at that point, Spike's ready to die. And then that's the first time, not including the credits, mm-hmm. and other like little flashbacks with the fortune teller and shit, we actually see Julia and you see at least Spike's vision of her, his memories of her, the thing he can't let go of. And at that point, he was ready to just die, but he doesn't. He wakes up and the show keeps going. And that's when I was like watching it back then. I was like, oh, fuck. Okay, so like he's kind of like a zombie. He keeps throwing himself like he's trying to die, but he can't.
I'm the Forever Man. Bill Murray and Groundhog Day.
Yeah, but instead, Vicious is shot by Julia. I'm trying to like narrate this in a way that doesn't confuse you because I know you don't really know the character. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
No, you're all good. It's just, like I said, it sounds very heavy-handed, very ham-fisted right now.
Yeah, so bad guy tells girl that dude left. Bad guy tells good dude that girl wants bad dude. And the girl's like, well, that's horse shit. And now I'm empowered to take over the mob, even though I spent 10 episodes trying to escape my abusive husband. Now I'm just going to run the syndicate. So fuck men. Bullet. And
then fuck your wife. Bing bang.
Want a shot? So here's where, you know, everybody takes it overboard because they're like, this is what I'm talking about. It's fucking woke nonsense and fucking whammons and fucking blah blah blah.
Whammons.
Here's the thing. Both sides are over the line. Mm. Everybody's gotta take a fucking step back.
Right.
So for me, I don't have a problem with, you know, taking a character that's portrayed in a bad light and giving them more agency. They call that agency, you know, Tim. When you want her to be a bad bitch and shoot people instead of being victimized, you give them agency.
I'll give you fucking something. I'll give you this goddamn dick.
I'll give you this literary fucking elbow to the back of the skull. No, but they miss the point on what Julia is. When she basically gets hurt in the anime, it's like that video from Radiohead. They say something, but you can't hear what they're saying.
Right. And then all of a sudden they just start laying down. Are you talking about when they talk to the dude that's laying down, and all of a sudden he says something, and they all lay down?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you don't hear what she says until much later in the show. Like, the next episode, at the end of the next episode. So, she basically tells Spike, like, it's all a dream. So, you have, basically, all these people who are stuck in the past in their own ways and they can't move forward. They're kind of stuck in limbo.
Okay.
So, that's the idea of, like, are you living in the real world? Is this whole thing a dream?
Are you in the Matrix? Are you just a battery?
Are you alive or just breathing? You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
That idea. So what Julia represents in a lot of ways is like the unattainable. Like she, in Spike's mind, she was like this really nice girl working at the convenience store. But in reality, she's a killer, dude. Like she's fucking like, she's got guns. She's outrunning the fucking mob. They're giving her chase. She's a bad, bad mama.
So Did they set up the live-action series to have a season two?
I think that's what they were hoping for. But the reviews have been, like, fucking... Here's the part that I don't... I think what they wanted to do was have Julia be the villain and then come around to falling in love with Spike again. Then she dies. Then Spike and Vicious have their final showdown.
Uh-huh.
Unnecessary. To me, unnecessary.
So basically you had all this build up for nothing.
Yeah.
For a waste.
Pretty much a waste, because Vicious is not dead. He's chained up in the basement. Julia runs a syndicate. Spike and Jet's friendship is, like, shattered. And then the little kid Ed shows up. And she's, like, super anime, like...
Kawaii.
Mega kawaii. But, like, I don't think you got far enough in the show to see Ed.
I don't think so. Name doesn't ring a bell.
But, well, it's a girl. But her name's Ed. But, like, you know, every show, Cowboy Bebop is no different. Every anime has to have, like, a, you know, adventure. Like, kind of, like, big eyeballs and shit. And the actress really went for it. So I was like, okay, cool. That didn't bother me. A lot of people were like, oh my god, I have, like, con vibes. Like, convention, like, costume, anime club vibes. Yeah, it's real. But it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. But, like, what bothers me more is, like, having Julia want to be the boss after being abused for years by her husband and wanting to escape. She was tougher in the anime. She was tougher because she was like a fucking, you know, a killer alongside Spike and Vicious.
She was Beyonce up in that boot.
She was. It was just alluded to. You didn't see it. You didn't need to see it. Because you can have characters that just exude attitude and confidence and mystery.
Right. If they're written right.
If they're written right.
If they're written right and the person playing them knows how to carry themselves.
You can tell me more with two sentences than you could with a paragraph.
Yeah.
Cut. Chop this shit down. So, all in all, you know, I skipped over a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that's like... stuff they were building up to for season two, based on what I found out, but, like, I think a lot of people, like, as bad as the show is, people still need to kind of chill the fuck out.
The cancel culture is strong, though, bro. Because here's my thing, and this is something I'm trying to get better about, is I'm trying not to go to things and be like, that sucks. That's fucking stupid. That, get rid of it. What I'm trying to do better now is just, I don't personally like it, but you like it, and that's okay. I'm never going to get into it. You want to get into it, you want to be a fan of it? Awesome. But too much now, cancel culture is just so appropriated now that it's just completely, it could be something just super benign, and people are gonna be like, yeah, cancel the fuck out of that. Stupid, it's fucking dumb, it's dumb. I wonder, let me look at something real quick.
I think honestly too, dude, not to get off on too much of a, like, a Dennis Miller.
No, you're fine, go ahead.
Not to get off on too much of a Dennis Miller rant, but I'm after seeing this, I'm more scared for the fucking Sandman. Because even if the writers have their heart in the right place, but they fuck it up. I looked up that dude's IMDb too. That dude does not have the fucking experience, I think, to take on a Sandman. That kind of show, you need a team of literary fucking assassins to handle shit like that. Just like this show needed. But I think they just got a bunch of fucking out of college people.
Mm-hmm.
Showed them 4 episodes and they watched the rest of the shit on fucking, you know, Watch Mojo, top 10 best moments. And tried to throw the slapdash the shit together, and it's like, nah, son. No.
Welcome to Watch Mojo.
But, like, there was a moment when one of the, well, I guess the non-binary actor, the thespian, was talking about how they're excited to be part of the show, they were a fan of the original, and their quote was basically taken out of context by the fucking writer of the article, and put in like this salacious fucking headline that people took and ran with it in the opposite direction of cancel culture, of like, all these fucking queers are taking over the universe. Get it off me. I'm not going to wear pink socks. You know, this is like horse shit. Like, it's not, I feel like either side is so exaggerated in their interpretation of what they're seeing.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, both sides have to fucking just stop and read the whole fucking article before just seeing a headline and then making a fucking 25-minute rant video on YouTube about it. Then 130,000 people are going to be like, yeah, man, the fucking, the wokeness of Hollywood is out of control.
So I'm looking up the, I'm looking up some articles on the live action Bebop.
Yeah.
And I talk about, the one list I found was every live action character in Cowboy Bebop ranked worst to best.
Mm-hmm.
Number 15, who do you think it was?
The dog.
Aang?
Yeah. No. Yeah, read it to me.
Vicious.
Okay.
Vicious is the capitalist of the syndicate, dangerous mafia of Cowboy Bebop. Given much more screen time in this live-action adaptation as well as a complete backstory. Vicious's father, Caliban, is one of the syndicate elders, and Vicious is constantly trying to live up to his cruel expectations.
I forgot a moment. There's another moment that I fucking hated. Can I tell you about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Fuck this list.
Fuck this. But basically, just in long story short, it says basically the same things you were just complaining about with Vicious.
So, the reason why Spike left the syndicate in the live action, he decides, because Vicious killed the Neptunians,
mm-hmm.
that there's going to be, you know, retaliation, right? So, Spike decides, instead of killing Vicious, he goes in and kills the entire Neptune crew.
Because why not?
To the point when he's leaving, and there's a little Neptunian kid that walks up, and he's like, get out of here, kid. In the beginning of that episode, him and Vicious were cleaning up a dead body. The wife and the daughter walk in. He's like, get the fuck out of here. And Vicious is like, what are you doing? He's like, no kids. In the same...
Leon the Professional.
Don't in the same episode.
Mm.
Same episode, Spike shoots the fucking kid. In the back. Yeah.
Do they do that in the anime?
Fuck no.
Yeah.
No, in the anime, all you see, again, glimpses, because you don't need to see all the whole thing. All
this bullshit, yeah.
What you see is Spike with the fucking overcoat, with the roses that he was going to give Julia. It's a fucking machine gun, and he's shooting these fucking dudes in, like, the church. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, bleeding, and he's smiling. No words. Just music and that. That, right there... Goosebumps for a lifetime. For me.
So is that what they hint at the, in the first episode where they show, like, the rose in the rain? Okay. All right.
You got it. And that's not, dude, I mean, this shit is tale as old as time. So you, me talking about it now, I can't do this shit justice. Watch that shit on a rainy day and you're going to be like, I guarantee you're going to be like, yeah, this show's fucking good. There's a shelf life for good shows. Like, honestly, think about this. Stranger Things. Do you think that show would be in an even higher regard if they never did season 2 or 3 and just did season 1 done?
Yeah.
I think that show would have fucking legend status.
Yeah.
People need to remember that and stick with that. If you have an idea that might be better if they just walk off in the sunset and that's it, next thing, then fucking leave it at that. That's how you become legends.
Yeah, I'm sure Drake threw a whole bunch of money at Netflix because he's like, I want to see Millie Bobby Brown.
What a dirty motherfucker that guy is.
That dude is such a creep. That dude's such a creep.
Dirty motherfucker.
And don't get me wrong, like, she's a cute girl, but I wouldn't be like, hey, you want a date? Because I fucking... I mean, A, I'm married, but B, you know, I don't even think she's 18 yet, is she?
I don't know. Don't look her up. You're going to be on a watch list.
I'm not going to be like Millie Bobby Brown, nude ass.
Don't even say it.
I mean, don't listen to this recording, FBI. No, she is not yet. She will be 18 in February.
Wow.
But like I said, she's a cute girl, but like, I'm too old for that. So is Drake, and I think Drake's fucking older than my ass.
That's dead on that.
That's dead on that.
Peeping through the window. That's a crazy throwback. Anyway.
Call me on the phone.
Cause Lily remembers.
Don't leave me alone.
How did we get to Dennis Graham from Cowboy Bebop? What the fuck have we done?
What have I done?
What have I done?
No, he's actually younger than me. Okay. He's a couple months younger than me. Well,
still fuck him.
His birthday is October 24th, 1986.
No, seriously, Tim, fuck him. He, like, pulls out of your dick, like, let's go get him.
Seriously, Tim, fuck him. Go
get him. You got it. But
here comes that big Tim energy.
Holy shit. I don't know, man. I feel like I don't want season 3 to end on a sad note. It doesn't really. I think I'm just more inspired to do my own thing and to seek out more creative shit by people who really are trying to get after it and are passionate about really good storytelling, yeah, and like experimental storytelling and taking risks. The shit we've been talking about this whole season. Like, so many shows are coming out. I've heard good things about Midnight Mass. I gotta finish that. I heard that show is beast. I don't know if there's other shows you've been watching, like that the Steve Martin show.
Yeah, Only Murders in the Building. That one's really good. Squid Game. I've been trying to get you to watch Squid Game. Squid Game is really good.
That's next. I gotta finish this Jesus shit, and then I'll jump into Squid shit.
Yeah, Squid Game is good. Alice in Borderland is good, except for Alice in Borderland is like a lot heavier than Squid Game was. Same basic concept. You wake up, you're in a killing game. But a little mini spoiler.
No, I don't need spoilers.
Are you going to watch Alice in Borderland?
Yeah, I'll watch that shit.
Okay, well, I'll leave it be.
Silence!
Well, Squid Game, what I will say is Squid Game was everybody didn't know each other.
Okay.
Alice in Borderland, they do.
Oh, fuck.
Which makes...
You just ruined it.
Which makes the deaths a lot harder in the show.
Alright.
I don't think I'm going to watch it, but I hear Hellbound is real good.
I saw a trailer. It looked pretty tough.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are good shows. There are good shows out there.
Definitely buried in the algorithm.
They're buried. Yes.
Buried by the algorithm. Got to find them.
Yeah. Either that or, like... The only other show I think I watch is House. Just because I love Hugh Laurie. That man's amazing.
But just like with music, man, the hunt continues for the good shit. Like, the very unique shit that I, like, you know, I bring up the leftovers. Like, Sometimes hard to watch, hard to understand shit. That's what I'm after. I'm always after that shit. So, I mean... The Bebop thing's gonna disappear from my mind, except for that testicle line, which is still fucking weird. But, dude, I got my kid watching the original with me this morning. We started watching it.
Taste my testicles, Eric.
No! Taste my testicles to jazz! It is kind of funny. In my first novel, I kind of set up the chapters like Cowboy Bebop. Like how each chapter is like sort of like a little mini case.
Mm.
I did that like as like influence and like a shout out to
the show.
Shout out
to Bebop.
Yeah. And also my first novel has a jazz club in it too. So there you go. Buy my book, everybody. Don't watch the live action. Buy my book.
Buy all the Eric Danhoff books.
It's got whiskey, angels, demons, and jazz.
Season 4, Eric and I have started a list for season 4.
Big plans.
Big plans.
Big dicks, big plans.
And then big dicks again. You know, us being just goofy and stupid in my basement. But that's all I got. I mean, yeah. I'm unexciting tonight. Sorry, everybody.
No, it's good.
I let Eric kind of just go.
For a while.
Because I'm unexciting. I'm uninteresting.
Take it away, cold medicine.
Look at Mr. Cellophane. Cellophane.